letters that his grandmother had written to him, and I made copies of them. The handwriting looks like that we have there. And I thought I would try to, before I really gone through them, I thought the title of our talk is The Girl's Life of Hope. Well, it turns out to be more history, family history, as well as hope, going way back. And because of the love letter, I'm going to have to read most of this because I've taken direct quotes from the letters. It's easier to describe than to edit it. So I said that the following is some information that I derived from these letters. They were written in 1942 by Elizabeth Speer of Rockport. And she was always called Lizzie, if I can remember, to her grandson, Ross Speer of Kittery. She was 96 years old at the time. She was the daughter of Edward and Olive Pace True of Hope. So much of what follows is actually quotes from the letters. And as I say, it was about the girl's life of hope, but it starts out, the first letter says, "I'm going to take you back 130 years or more. My grandmother Payson, the wife of Asa Payson, was 19 years old. She was the mother of three children, a son and twin daughters. She eventually had 13 more children, for a total of 16. About 1787, quote, when Grandfather Payson was 3 years old, he with his father, mother, and two other children went from Warren to Hope on a sled driven by a yoke of oxen. It took 3 days for him to travel over." Well, first of all, in these letters, Lizzie tells about her mother and her mother's sister. And I again quote from the letters. "Mother's sister, Orinda, was a seamstress, and she used to go in different families and make men's coats, vests, and pants. Every stitch was sewed by hand, as there were no sewing machines in those days. Mother said if she sewed in the evening, they allowed her 2 candles. I've got a little bit more about the candles later on. She worked hard and worked in her own home long after she was married. Uncle Madison, which was James Madison St. Clair, was her husband, was not rich, and she knew Aunt Mary, Mary Dakin, who married John Fogler. She knew that Aunt Mary and Mother could have more than she could, and one day she said, Mary and Olive were born with a silver spoon in their mouth, and I was born with a damned old iron one. I think Aunt Lizzie had a good sense of humor in writing these letters, when you consider that at her age, how she produced all these long letters. Now, this is an interesting bit of the story. Quote, "Where the fish hatchery now is in Camden, there was once a paper mill." Well, I remember a fish hatchery down in Camden. It used to be at the corner of Molyneux Road and Boyacre Avenue. So I guess this is what she was writing about. So I can remember going down to that fish hatchery in those days. So when Mother and Aunt Hannah were perhaps 14 and 16 years old, they worked in this mill cutting rags with shears. I think they walked from Hope to the mill every morning and back at night. It's about 4 miles. But it probably took a little over an hour each way. But when you think that today people travel an hour in an automobile to get to work, so it may not have been too bad. They probably had one dress and the material grandmother rolled from yarn she had spun. Later on she says that my father was a rich man, but we never had the clothes poor man's daughters have today. So we have all we needed. Now here's about the candles. All the light we had was tallow candles. Father used to sell them from his store. He, with Mother's help, used to make dozens and dozens of them. They had two long, narrow wooden slabs. I think the ends rested on the back of two kitchen chairs, and about as far apart as the width of a chair. There were dozens of small sticks, perhaps a yard in length. They measured from a ball of wicking twice the length of a candle, pinched the two ends together, twisted it, leaving a loop large enough to put the stick through the loop, and these sticks with the wickings were placed below the slabs, at one end was a large iron pot filled with melted tallow. They took one of these sticks, dipped it into the kettle until it took all the tallow it could hold, and then put back from where it was taken. When every stick was dipped, they were left until the tallow was cool. Then they went through the process again until the candles were the right size. They used to have molds, some small, some larger. Mother had one that made six candles, and she often made them. These candles, when they came from a mold, were smooth, as you see candles today. Those that were dipped were not so smooth. I was a child, but that picture is very clear to me. And I found a drawing that shows the candle hanging from the dip and the mold, so that's the type of thing they apparently had. So I said mostly they had, all the light they had was some tallow candles. When I was a kid here, we'd had kerosene lanterns. I don't remember the candles being used, but we always had kerosene lanterns for light. Now another subject, he refers to Dr. Dakin, who was very musical and taught singing at the school. Quote, I remember him. He came to the house one day and had Mary and me march forth and back through the sitting room and dining rooms while he played the piano. When his wife died, he had eight young girls dressed in white march before the hearse from the church to the cemetery. Mary and Lizzie were among the eight. Quote, I was perhaps about 18 years old, and I remember I had on a white dress with a pink rosebud on it. We jump around on the subject matter because it isn't necessarily continuity. When she wrote three of these letters, and some of them she repeated herself a few times, so I didn't read the letters directly. Again, quoting from the letters, our house always seemed to be an open house. So many coming now and then, and oftentimes company came near mealtime. Yet I never saw her, my mother, nervous or one bit excited if she was not prepared for their coming. So many summers we had a house full, sometimes more than full, and Fanny, Lizzie's sister, and I used to have a room to keep to sleep in at the Pierce house across the road. Father's nieces and nephews, mother's nieces and nephews, friends, uncles and aunts, always a house full of company. I was the one who washed the dishes for 16 or more all summer. When one of the company seemed a bit high-toned and very well-educated, Sister Mary was the one who was placed in the parlor to entertain them. She was very pretty, attractive, and very pleasing. Although Rose and Fanny were pretty girls, they could not entertain as Mary could. Now, I gather from these letters, and several times she mentions that Hope Connor was noted for its singers and good penmen. And I think you probably all know that. In fact, Jesse Payson and Selden Dutton were quite well known for their penmanship and the books that they wrote. So again, quoting from the letters. In the place where the little white church now stands, there was a very large yellow church. This was torn down when I was about 13 years old. The present church was built in 1860, when Aunt Lizzie was about 14 years old. I heard Mother say that after the minister pronounced his benedictions, Daniel Mansfield would sing, and she said not a person moved from his seat until he was through singing. He had a wonderful voice. I do not remember of ever seeing him, but I can just remember his brother Sam, who lived where Everett Hobbs now lives. One time when he was in Boston, he went to a prayer meeting. Of course he sang with the congregation. He soon found he was singing all alone, and all the other singers having stopped to listen to him. So that was commented because of the singers. In fact, in my young days, there was always a nice choir at this church that now stands there. I think there were as many as 10 or 12 singers in the choir. I remember Gus Payson, Hiram Hobbs, James Hobbs, Dick Barnes, Frank Matthews, Eddie Bills, Louise Payson, among others. They had no organ to help. I've seen the tears roll down Dr. Bartlett's face as he stood listening to this choir. The most wonderful voices were the Daggett girls, Mary Tenner, Helen Alto, and Carrie Soprano. When there's a dance at the corner, they always stop dancing long enough to hear the girls sing. It seems but yesterday I heard them, and I'm sure I'm the only living person who ever heard them sing. In this old yellow church, there was a high gallery on three sides. A board about 1 foot wide was the finish. We children used to walk around these three sides, looking down on the pews. Every pew had a door. Supposing we had fell, I guess I would have broken our bones. As an aside, let me tell you about a newspaper article I found written by Mrs. D.A. Payson in 1880, in which she describes the church, or meeting house, with high pews and doors to shut out oneself and families in so as to not be disturbed by their two familiar neighbors. She also described the pulpit as being, quote, some 8 or 10 feet high above our heads, so that the preacher, however inferior physically, looked down upon his hearers, certainly and literally, if in no other sense. That was from the newspaper article by Mrs. Payson. Now back to Lizzie's letter. Your Aunt Mary's husband, Alonzo Payson, built the white church, and I remember when the steeple was raised. It was quite an eventful day. Lon Payson and his brother Carter used to go under the belfry and play. One had a cornet and one a clarinet. They were fine players and it sounded good. This was after the day's work was done. Now, another subject. In the winter, about the only place we had the sliding downhill was a little hill where Elma now lives. Now the Blanchard home. We could slide all day without fear of autos. Only the jingling of sleigh bells warned us to step aside. The snow drifted a bit in our backyard. When I was a child, I used to take a high chair for a sled and slide down this little bank. Aunt Martha's husband, Lyman Smith, died when he was only 36 years old, leaving Aunt Martha with four small children. She separated her children and taught school. Son Freeman lived with Mr. and Mrs. George Fogler. Grandmother took son Lyman, who was a baby, and daughter Mary was to live with Mrs. Cotton, who was living across from father's store. She was Sister Mary's age, and she did not like Mrs. Cotton's home as much as she did our home, and she lived with us most of her young days. At one time, when I was about 9 or 10 years old, Rose and Mary went to a party somewhere. She doesn't say where. At the house, the house that they lived in, the two rooms on the ground floor and the stairway to the chamber went up between them. So that she refers to this little entry between the sitting room and parlor, and in the winter the doors were seldom open. My brother Augustine found a little red squirrel and put it in this entryway. The girls must have had occasion to go in the parlor getting ready for the party, so of course the squirrel ran out. And later that evening, I sat by my mother at the table when all of a sudden, mother jumped into the middle of the floor and jumping up and down, shaking her clothes, and out came the squirrel. After the Civil War, her older brother, Edward, went to England. So she quotes on this, when I was in the normal school, our class was studying Scotland. I had received a letter from her brother from Scotland. I took it to my teacher and asked her if she would like to read it. The next day she asked me if I was willing she should read it before the class. She told the class it was a letter from a tourist, and this pleased me very much. Well, that's the end of the story that I have. There's a lot more in these letters, but they didn't particularly relate to that sort of thing. If anybody wants to look at what these letters look like, they can pass those around. Well, that's
so when is your
grandson? See, I don't have that. Well, she, in 1942, she was 96 years old, so.
These were Elizabeth Spears' writing from her diary, and it was narrated by Ed True on July 16th, 2002.